activity was finally coming home to roost. Most systems of magic or mysticism have rules of conduct, things you do and things you do not. You break the rules at your peril. The Wiccans call it the threefold law. What you do to others comes back to you threefold. Buddhists call it karma. Christians call it answering for your sins. I call it what goes around comes around. It really does, you know. I had the Firestar tucked into the front of my pants, minus the inner pants holster, because the gun could ride higher and not dig in as much. Edward had loaned me a paddle holster for the Browning, and I had ended up with it in front, so that I looked like one of those Wild West gunslingers with two guns crossed over my hips. Though actually the black polo shirt came down low enough to hide both guns. Untucked, most shirts are too long on me. It looked sloppy, but it did hide the guns if you weren't looking too close. The polo shirt was a little too close to the body not to show telltale lumps, though Edward had been thoughtful enough to bring my black suit jacket, which helped camouflage the lumps. Last time I'd been here with guns, I'd had the police backing me, but now we were taking guns into a bar, very illegal in New Mexico. Strangely, it wasn't a big worry, but I did hope the cops didn't choose today for a raid. I still had the wrist sheaths plus knives on my wrists. Ramirez had collected all my knives from the Inferno and given them to Edward, who had scrubbed, cleaned, oiled, and sharpened them to an inch of their lives. I'd had to leave the big blade in the car because I couldn't figure out how to carry it concealed, and carrying what amounted to a small sword barehanded seemed a little too aggressive. Edward had even given me an incendiary grenade from my jacket pocket. It helped balance out the Derringer in my right-hand pocket so that the jacket didn't swing too funny as I walked. The Derringer had been his idea, too, though I had brought it with me from St. Louis. I wasn't sure I really needed it today, but I'd learned never to argue with Edward when he gave me a weapon. If he thought I might need it, I almost certainly would. Scary thought on the grenade, isn't it? At some unknown signal, Olaf moved up and tried the bar door. It was locked. He knocked twice, hard enough to rattle the door. He also stood right in front of the door. After staring down a sawed-off shotgun the last time I came to the bar, I might not have stood facing front at that black door. Either Olaf hadn't heard about the shotgun, or he didn't care. Maybe he was trying to be muy macho for my benefit, or maybe for his own benefit. If he'd been more secure in himself, then he wouldn't have been so easy to piss off. Even standing off to one side, the sound of the locks being drawn back was loud. Good, solid locks, just from the sound of it. The door pushed open, slowly, showing a thick slice of darkness like a cave pressing against the sunlight. The door continued to push slowly open as if on its own power. Only at the very last did a large, beefy arm come into view, spoiling the illusion. Harpo stood in the door, peering out at us, eyes hidden behind the same small black sunglasses he'd been wearing the first time I saw him. He had changed clothes, though. He was wearing a jean vest open over a very hairy chest and stomach. He looked more like a bear than a werewolf. He looked like a great big sleepy bear that had rolled out of bed, pulled on some clothes, and rumbled out to the door. Even his otherworldly energy seemed dimmer than last time. But he blocked the door with his bulk and growled out, "Anita, but not the others." I moved around Olaf, and he actually moved back so I could face Harpo. Either Olaf was being nicer, or he figured better me than him in the door. Nikki said I could bring some friends. Harpo peered down at me.
"Looks like you need better friends."
I didn't touch the bruise. It wouldn't help. Let's just say I was relying on police backup and they were late. Which was true, and I still wanted to know where the hell Ramirez had been while I'd been playing Lone Ranger. I like policemen, but I knew the comment would please Harpo. It did. He smiled a quick baring of teeth that flashed wolf fangs in the thickness of his beard. He had definitely been spending too much time in wolf form. There was a low, murmuring voice, male. Harpo turned to look over one massive shoulder towards the voice. Then he turned back to me. The smile was gone.
"Boss says you were invited, but not the others."
I gave a very small shake of my head because a big one would have hurt. "Look, Nikki invited me here. He said I could bring friends. I brought them. I'm here before 10 in the fucking morning. I came down here to talk about our common problem, not to be dicked around at the door."
"This ain't dicking around," Harpo said, hand cupping his groin. "I can show you dicking around."
I held up a hand. "Fine. My mistake for using the wrong word. I didn't come down here to be stopped at the door." He was still rubbing himself, getting into it or trying to piss me off. He'd succeeded on the last.
I was so not standing here with 40-plus stitches in my back, watching some werewolf ape jack off before I'd even had coffee. I am too tired for this shit, I said. He started to get a little body language into it, smiling at me. I raised my voice so it would carry into the open door of the bar. I am not going anywhere today without my friends here. If you're waiting for me to give in on that point, then we're wasting each other's time. There was no answer from inside the bar. Harpo had gotten a little hip action into his show. I'd had enough. When the monster sucks your life out, Nikki, don't worry, it doesn't really hurt. Have a nice day. I turned to my friends. They're not going to let us see Nikki. Edward nodded.
Then let's go.
He made a small motion, and Bernardo and Olaf moved off down the sidewalk. Edward lagged a little behind with me. I think we were both hoping that Harpo would call my bluff, except it was only partially a bluff. We could have forced our way in there with weapons, but Nikki wouldn't talk at the end of a gun. I needed a dialogue, not an interrogation. I started walking away. Edward fell into step behind me, but kept an eye on our backs. I wasn't flexible enough to do much backtrailing without turning my entire body around, which was awkward. Besides, I trusted Edward to watch our backs. I admit there was a tension between my shoulder blades, waiting for Harpo to come running out and say, "Come back, let's talk." But he didn't, so I kept walking. Olaf and Bernardo were beside the Hummer waiting for Edward to unlock the doors. We were actually getting in the car when Harpo appeared on the sidewalk and started to walk towards us. He looked unarmed, but not happy. I sat in the seat and closed the door. "Start the engine," I said. Edward did what I told him. Harpo started jogging towards us, waving those big arms. Some shapeshifters run like their animal counterparts, all grace and God-given motion. Harpo was not one of those. He ran awkwardly, as if he hadn't done it in a while, at least not in human form. It made me smile.
"You just wanted to see him run," Edward said. "Petty."
"Yeah, it's petty. Fun, though," I said. He put the car in gear, and Harpo put on a burst of awkward speed. He got to the car as Edward was starting to pull away. He actually slammed a big, meaty hand on the hood. Edward stopped. My window glided down, and I looked up at Harpo. There was sweat beating on his naked chest. His breath came harsh and too quick.
"Fuck," he said.
"Did you want something?" I asked.
"Boss says that you can all come inside."
He was leaning his hands against the Hummer while he got his breath back. "Okay," I said. Edward pulled the car back into the curb while Harpo moved so there was room. We all got back out of the car. Harpo was still not breathing right. "Aerobic exercise is the key to good cardiovascular health," I said sweetly as we waited for him to start walking back to the bar.
"Fuck you."
I thought about getting back in the Hummer, but I'd played the game as far as I was willing to go. I wanted to talk to Baco, but only with backup. Harpo had said I could do both. I'd achieved my goal. Anything else was pure childishness. I was feeling petty, but not that petty. When he recovered, he was once again the sunglass-wearing muscle man, face impassive. He strode back, hands in loose fists, doing his best impression of a moving mountain of flesh. His otherworldly energy prickled along my skin. Just a whisper of power, as if it were leaking out without him meaning for it to, which probably meant he was pissed. Strong emotions made it harder to hold all that vibrating energy inside. None of us spoke on the short walk back. Men are usually not good at useless small talk or don't see a need for it, and I was just too busy concentrating on walking normally without giving away just how much it hurt to sweat chit-chat. Harpo held the door for us. I glanced at Edward. He gave me blank eyes back. Fine. I walked inside and the others followed. 3 days ago, I'd have been nervous stepping into that dark with the vibrating energy of werewolves rising like an invisible tide. But that was 3 days ago, and there just wasn't that much fear left in me. My body hurt, but the rest of me was oddly numb. Maybe I'd finally crossed that line that Edward seemed to live behind. Maybe I'd never really feel anything again. When even that thought didn't scare me, I knew I was in trouble.
Chapter 47. It took a second for my eyes to adjust to the dark interior, but it wasn't my eyes that told me something was wrong. It was the skin on the back of my neck. I didn't argue with it. I had my hand on the browning underneath the shirt and didn't care if it gave away the fact that I was carrying a gun.
They'd be fools to think we'd come in here unarmed. Los Lobos Biker Club might have a lot of faults, but being that kind of fool wasn't one of them. Nicky Bacco was lying on the bar with his hands tied to his ankles so that the ropes formed a sort of handle, like he was some kind of carry-on bag. His face was bloody and bruised, and the injuries were a lot fresher than mine. I had the Browning out, and I felt rather than saw the other three fan out until we were the corners of a box, and each corner held a gun. Each corner watched its section of the room, and whether we liked each other or not, I trusted all of us to take care of our sections of the room, even Olaf. It was good to be sure. My part of the room included the bar with Nicky on it, a tall man with a beard and a curl of waist-length ponytail over one shoulder, two wolves the size of ponies, and a man's body staring sightless at the room, his throat cut like a second mouth, red and screaming. I had a peripheral sense of how full the room was of crowding bodies. The energy was thick enough to choke on. I heard a noise to the right and did three things almost simultaneously. I pointed the Browning at the noise, drew the Firestar left-handed to point at the man with the ponytail, and let my eyes flick to the side to see what I'd heard. Good that I'd been practicing left-handed firing drills. The heavy slithering sound came again from behind the bar. The bar was in my section of the room. It was my ball, so to speak. I felt the others surging forward like a trembling tide about to swallow us all. We could shoot a lot of them, but there had to be over 100 in this room, and we were dead if they all came at once. Fear tightened my stomach, jerking my pulse into my throat. Just like that, the numbness was gone, chased away by adrenaline and the musky scent of wolves. There were more wolves than just the two in front of me out in that packed, darkened room. I could smell them. My stomach jerked again, but not from fear. The mark that tied me to Richard, tied me to his pack, was alive again. It flared in my body like a tiny flame reborn, waiting to be fed so it could grow. Great. Just great. I had to worry about it later. My concentration was all used up. The ponytailed man just stood there smiling. He was handsome in a rough-around-the-edges, tattooed prisoner sort of way. Even in the dimness, his eyes flashed wolf amber, not human. I also knew what, or would that be who, I was looking at. This was their Ulfric, their wolf king. He stood in a space of emptiness with most of the pack huddled farther back into the room, and yet his power made up for theirs. His power filled the nearly empty side of the room with a flesh-creeping energy like thunder just before it strikes. The tension was thick enough that I had to swallow some of it before I could speak. "Greetings, Ulfric of the Los Lobos clan. What's shaken?" He threw his head back and laughed, a big, hearty, good-natured sound that ended with a howl that crawled out of his human throat and down my spine. "Nice effect," I said, "but this is an official police investigation into the mutilation murders. I'm sure you've heard about them." He turned those startling pale eyes to me.
"I've heard."
"Then you know that we aren't investigating your pack." He laid a casual hand on Nicky, who whimpered even though I don't think it really hurt.
"Nicky is my Vargamor. If the police wish to speak with him, then they must ask me first."
He smiled, and I was close enough to notice that his teeth were human. No fangs for the Ulfric. "Sorry, the only other pack I've ever met that had a Vargamor doesn't make you talk to the Ulfric first. My apologies on the oversight." I hoped whatever we were doing was going to be over soon, because I couldn't keep up the gun in each hand stance for long. I'd practiced left-handed, but it was still my weak hand, and the bite in it was already starting a faint tremble in the muscles. I had to be able to lower my hand soon or it would begin to shake.
"If you were the police, then I would accept your apologies. We are always ready to help the police."
That last brought a wave of snickers from the packed house.
"But I don't see any police in this room."
"I'm Anita Blake. I'm a vampire executioner," he cut me off.
"I know who you are. I know what you are."
I didn't like that last. Made me nervous. "And just what am I?"
"You are the Lupa of the Thronos Roque clan, and you have come to my clan for help. But you have not honored me or my Lupa. You enter my lands without permission. You contact my Vargamor without talking to me first, and you give us no tribute."
His power grew with every sentence until it was like standing in warm water up to your chin, knowing that if it got much deeper, you'd drown. But I understood the rules now. I'd insulted him, and he had to wipe out that insult. I'd try sweet reason, but I didn't have much hope for it. Besides, my left arm was getting tired. Hell, so was my right.
Whatever was behind the bar moved in a huge roll of motion that you could feel and hear. It sounded bigger than a werewolf. I flew down here on police business. I did not enter your lands as Lupa of the Thronos Roque clan. I came down here as Anita Blake, the executioner, that's all.
But you contacted my Vargamore.
He slapped Nikki's thigh, and that did seem to hurt, because he closed his eyes and writhed at the touch, straining through his gag to scream.
I didn't know Nikki was your Vargamore until after I'd talked to him. No one told me that this bar was your lair.
You're Ulfric. You can smell that I'm not lying. He gave a small nod.
You tell the truth.
He looked at the small man on the bar, running his hand over his body the way you'd stroke a dog, though the dog doesn't usually wince and try to pull back.
But he knew that he was my Vargamore. Nikki knew that you were a Lupa of another clan. It was the hot topic for a while, a human Lupa.
Lupa's often just another word for the Ulfric's girlfriend, I said. He turned those golden eyes to me, more gold because of the heavy black eyebrows that framed them.
Nikki agreed to help you without asking me later, or even telling me about your visit.
He gave a low growl that refreshed the fading goosebumps on my skin.
I am Ulfric. I lead here.
He slapped Nikki, and fresh blood trickled from his nose. I badly wanted to put a stop to the abuse, just out of principle, but I didn't want it badly enough to die for it, so I waited and watched Nikki Bako bleed. I didn't like it, but I let it happen. My left hand was beginning to cramp. I needed to either start shooting people or put my guns up. Even holding my arms out for this long was putting a strain on my back and chest.
Anita,
Edward said. And just the tone of my own name was enough. He was quietly telling me to hurry it up. Look, Ulfric, I didn't mean to walk into some inner pack squabble. I'm just trying to do my job, trying to keep more innocent people from being killed.
Humans are fun, he said. Sex and a meal, and you never have to leave your car. But you do not make them your queen.
His voice rose until with the last word he was screaming. Howls echoed him from the mob that was pressing close and closer.
Anita,
Edward said, and this time there was more of a warning to his voice. I'm working on it, Edward.
Work faster, he said.
You're a racist, Ulfric, I said. He stared at me.
What?
I'm human, so I'm good enough to fuck, good enough to kill, but not good enough to be your equal just because I'm human? You're a racist, chauvinistic, big bad wolf.
You come into my lands, ask aid of my pack, give no tribute to me or my Lupa, and now you're calling me names.
I don't know if he made some kind of psychic signal or his anger was enough, but the two giant wolves at his feet began to stalk forward on stiff legs. My left hand was beginning to shake visibly. Whatever was behind the bar thrashed, sounding large and bestial. My left hand was threatening to give out completely, and I needed both hands.
You die first, Ulfric, I said.
What?
And he sort of laughed when he said it. The first thing that jumps any of us, and I shoot you. No matter what else happens today, you'll be dead. Your two pony wolves better stop right where they are.
Your hand is shaking so badly, I don't think you've got it in you to kill anyone.
It was my turn to laugh. You think my hand is shaking because I feel remorse about the thought of shooting you? Boy, have you got the wrong girl. Look at my right hand, Ulfric. It's not shaking. A walking corpse took a bite out of my left hand a couple of days ago, so I'm a little shaky with my left, but trust me, I hit what I aim at. This is usually when I give my victim full eye contact and let them know I'm not bluffing, but I was divided between the Ulfric and his entourage, and the bar. How many of your wolves are you willing to sacrifice for your wounded pride?
If we fight, Anita, you and your friends will die.
And you'll die, and some of your best people, so wouldn't it be nice to avoid the carnage and have you tell me what the hell you want from me? You know I'm telling the truth. I didn't know that I was stepping on your toes. If Nikki is making some kind of power play behind your back, I didn't know it. So tell me what you want to make this social gaffe okay between us. Tell me before my left hand starts spasming so badly that I start shooting things just because I have to. He was watching me very narrowly, and I saw intelligence behind all the bragging and pride. There might be somebody home to bargain with. If there wasn't, then we were going to die. We were going to die, not because of the case, but because I had been at one time Richard's girlfriend. It was a stupid reason to die.
Tribute. I want the Lupa of the Thronos Roque clan to give me tribute.
You mean a gift, I said.
He nodded.
If it's the right kind of gift, yeah.
If I'd been coming to Albuquerque with Richard on personal business, I'd have expected to make a gift to the local pack. The gift was usually a freshly killed animal, jewelry for the Lupa, or something mystical. Death, jewelry, or magic. I didn't have any jewelry on me except Leonora's necklace, and I wasn't exactly sure what it would do for someone other than me. For all I knew, it might be harmful if it was just handed out. I didn't have enough information. The charm was so not leaving my body. I lowered my left hand. One, it was twitching so badly I wasn't 100% sure I could hit anything with it. Two, I couldn't keep pointing guns if we weren't going to kill people. Three, my hand was hurting.
Your word that if I give you a suitable gift, we'll all leave here in safety.
You take the word of an ex-con drug-dealing biker gang leader?
No, but I'll take the word of the Ulfric of the Los Lobos clan. That I'll take.
There were rules, and if he broke his word as Ulfric, he lost brownie points. He had to be on shaky ground anyway for a human, no matter how magically powerful, Vargamore to have challenged his authority. He wouldn't give his word and break it, not in front of his pack.
I am Ulfric of the Los Lobos clan, and I give my word that you will all go in safety, if your gift is worthy.
I didn't like the wording on that last. I didn't have time to stop at Tiffany's and pick up something for the little lady. Didn't get to hunt on the way here from the hospital. Cops frown on you shooting animals in town. The mystical shit is beyond me today.
Then you have nothing worthy,
he said, but he looked puzzled as though he was sure I had a gift of some kind. Let me see what's behind the bar, and I'll put up my guns and make tribute. I tried to put up the fire star, but my left hand was shaking so badly that I couldn't raise the shirt and slide it inside my pants. I needed two hands for it, which meant I needed to be able to holster the Browning.
Done, he said. Monstruo, rise. Greet our guest.
It rose above the bar in a thin line of pale flesh like the rising of a crescent moon. Then a face came into view. It was a woman's face with one eye gone stiff and dry like some kind of mummy. Face after face, rose, brown and withered like a string of monstrous beads, strung together with pieces of body, arms, legs, and thick black thread like gigantic stitches holding it all together, holding the magic inside. It rose up and up until it towered against the ceiling, curving like a giant snake to stare down at me. I estimated 40 heads, more, before I lost count, or lost heart to count anymore. The werewolves had moved farther back into the room like the tide retreating backwards. They feared the thing. I didn't blame them. I heard Bernardo say,
Fuck.
Olaf said something in German, which meant he wasn't watching his part of the room. Only Edward remained silent and on the job, ever vigilant. I have to admit that if the werewolves had wanted to jump me while that thing rose above me like some demented snake, I would have been slow. It was too much horror to leave room for anything else. I'd only seen something like it once before. That monster had been made by the most powerful Vaudun priestess I'd ever met. But hers had been formed of fresh zombies and pulled seamlessly together into one monstrous ball of flesh. Pure magic. This had been stitched together like Frankenstein's monster, and the bodies being dead like that, dried, deliberately mummified, or an after-effect of the spell. I dragged my gaze from the thing to Nicky Bacco still lying on the bar, gagged and bound and bloody. I heard my voice like a distant thing.
Why, Nicky, you bad, bad boy.
I'd made a joke when what I wanted to do was put a gun to his head and blow him away. Some things you did not do. Some things you simply did not do.
You see why he's still alive, the Ulfric said.
Too powerful to get rid of, I said, voice still oddly detached as if I wasn't really concentrating on what I was saying.
I used him as my threat. He would lay his magic on a wolf that was misbehaving, and they would be turned into what you see. And he would stitch them into the Monstruo. But my wolves fear him now more than they fear me.
I was nodding over and over because I couldn't think of a good thing to say. Alive. They were alive when Nicky did his magic. I had a truly awful thought. Somehow it seemed wrong to be putting away the guns, but I needed my hands for other things. I raised the shirt and slid the Browning home, though it wasn't as smooth as it would have been if the holster had been familiar. But my left hand was pretty much gone. I had to raise the shirt with my right and very carefully tuck the Firestar into the front of my pants. Even after the hand was empty, it continued to twitch uncontrollably. There was nothing I could do but wait for it to calm down on its own. I cradled the hand against my body and walked towards the monster. I stood on the other side of the bar from it, looking at one of those dried faces. The mouth had been sewn shut on this one. I didn't know why. I took a few deep cleansing breaths, and there was an odor of herbs to it, but mostly just a dry smell like tanned leather and dust. I reached out with my left hand. Even with the bandages and the muscle cramps, this was still my power hand, the hand to sense magic with. Most people have a hand that is better for sensing stuff, usually the opposite hand from the one you write with. I have no idea what ambidextrous people do. There was an amazing amount of power pushing out from the thing, but the bar was wide and I was hurt, so my concentration wasn't good, and I still couldn't answer the one question I needed answered. I used my right hand to sort of jump-sit on the bar, then got onto my knees. There was a face at eye level with me, and this one had eyes. A man's face, I think, with pale gray wolf eyes trapped in a dried mummy face. Those eyes stared out at me, and there was someone home. The walking dead don't show fear. I knew what I'd feel before I stretched my hand out toward the face. There was Nikki's power like a warm blanket of worms, squirming over my skin. It was some of the most uncomfortable magic I'd ever felt, unclean, as if the power itself would eat your flesh if you stayed too close to it for too long. This was where Nikki's energy had gone, and this was why no matter how much energy he gathered, it would never be enough. Magic this negative, this evil, is like a drug. It takes more and more energy to get the same result with worse and worse effect on the spellcaster. I sent my own magic into that mess, not to empower, but seeking. I felt the cool brush of a soul, and before I could pull back, my power ran up that column of trapped flesh, and the souls glowed behind my eyelids with cool white light. None of them had been dead when he did this to them. I wasn't 100% sure they were dead now. I opened my eyes and pulled my hand back from the thing. His power sucked at my hand like invisible mud. I pulled free with an almost audible pop. The man's face moved its withered mouth and made a long, dry sound twice.
"Help,"
it said.
"Help."
I swallowed a wave of nausea and was very glad I'd missed breakfast. I crawled on one arm and my knees to Nikki. I bent over him and whispered, "Would burning it free their souls?" He shook his head. "Can you free their souls?" He nodded. I think if he'd said yes to the first question, I'd have put the Browning to his head and killed him. But I needed him to free them, and I added that to my list of things to do before I left town. But there was nothing I could do for them today, except stay alive and, strangely, keep Nikki Bako alive. One of life's little ironies, that last. I sat on the bar with my legs dangling over the edge, hand cradled to my chest, dazed with the sheer evil of it. I'd seen my share, but this was near the top. This was near the top after what I'd seen in the hospital. At least the corpses were just eating bodies, not souls.
"You look like you've seen a ghost,"
the Ulfric said. "You're closer than you know," I said.
"Where is our gift?"
he said. "Where's your lupa?" He stroked the head of one of the wolves by his legs.
"This is my lupa."
"I can't share the gift with anyone in animal form," I said. He frowned, and it was very close to being angry.
"You must honor us."
"I plan to." I rolled the sleeve of my jacket back over my left arm. The wrist sheath had to go. I undid the straps, propping the blade, sheath and all, between my legs. The monster hovered behind me, peering curiously. It was distracting me. I couldn't save them today, and didn't want to see it anymore until I could fix it. "Can you order it to leave the room?" He looked at me.
"Scared?"
I can feel the souls crying out for help. It's sort of distracting. He looked at me, and I watched the color drain from his face.
"You mean that?"
I smiled, but not like it was funny. "You didn't know that he's trapping their souls in that thing?"
"He said he was."
His voice had gone softer. "You didn't believe him," I said. The Ulfric was gazing up at the thing as if he'd never seen it before.
"You wouldn't believe something like that, would you?"
"I would." I shrugged, wished I hadn't, and said, "But then this is my line of work. Can you please send it away?" He nodded and spoke rapidly in Spanish. The thing folded down on itself and crept away on arms and legs and bodies like a broken centipede. Sitting on the bar, I could see it go down a trap door behind the bar. When the last segment of it had slithered out of sight, I turned back to the Ulfric. He still looked pale. Bako is the only one who can free their souls. Don't kill him until he's done that.
I didn't plan to kill him,
the man said. That was before you knew. I don't know you well enough to know if when I leave you'll get all self-righteous and try to end this evil. Don't, please, or you'll condemn them all to an eternity of that. He swallowed like he was having a little trouble keeping down his own breakfast.
I won't kill him.
Good. I drew the knife from between my knees right-handed. Now gather round, boys and girls, because I'm only going to do this trick once. There was a general movement as the wolves moved forward. I spared a glance for the boys I'd come in with. They hadn't put their guns up, but they had them pointed at the floor or the ceiling. Edward was watching the wolves. Bernardo was watching the wolves too, though he looked pale. Olaf was watching me. I really, really didn't like him. I give honor to the Ulfric and Lupa of the Los Lobos clan. I give the most precious of gifts to the Ulfric, but not being true Lucoy, I cannot share this gift with the Lupa in her present form. For that, I apologize most sincerely. If I come back this way, I'll shop better. I sat the blade on the bar and leaned over the edge until I could reach a clean glass. One of those thick, chunky ones that people are so fond of putting scotch in. It was a strain to get back into a sitting position on the bar, but I managed it with the glass in one hand. I put the glass beside me on the bar and picked the knife up. I laid the blade against my left arm just above the wrist and stared at the whole, pale, unscarred flesh. There were scars just above it where a shape-shifted witch had clawed me, and the cross-shaped burn scar that was now a little crooked from the claw marks, but this one patch was still pure. I hoped it didn't scar, but what was one more? I took in a deep breath and sliced the blade down my skin. A sigh ran through the watching werewolves and whimpers from a few of the furrier throats. I ignored them. I'd known it would get a crowd reaction. I kept looking at my flesh and the damage I'd just done to it. The wound didn't bleed immediately. It was just a thin red line. Then the first drop spilled from the wound, and the rest of the wound spilled in crimson rivulets down my arm. Deeper than I'd wanted it, but probably about what was needed. I held the wound over the glass. Some of it splashed around the edges, trailing down the sides, but I managed to get it going into the cup. I didn't even need to squeeze the wound much to encourage the flow. Deeper than I wanted it, oh yeah. The Ulfric had moved closer, close enough that he was standing with his body touching my legs. The wolf that he'd introduced as his Lupa moved up to nuzzle at my knee, and he hit her. He backhanded her the way you'd hit a dog you didn't like much. Where was women's lib when you needed it? She went to her belly, crying in doggy fashion, telling him she hadn't meant any harm with her tail tight curled to her rump. No one else tried to move forward. If the Lupa couldn't share, the rest of them knew better than to try. The Ulfric stayed pressed against my legs.
Let me take it out of your arm.
He stared at my bleeding arm like I'd stripped for him, something beyond sex, beyond hunger, and yet a little of both. I raised the arm so the blood trickled down it in fast little streams of red, splashing down into the glass. His gaze followed the movement like a dog after a piece of food. The truth was that letting people lick a wound directly tended to distract me. Through the marks, I was bound to a werewolf and a vampire, both of which found blood exciting. The thoughts that filled me when I shared blood with anyone were too primitive, too overwhelming. Especially now with my shields in ruins, I couldn't risk it.
Is the gift worthy? I asked.
You know it is.
And his voice had that peculiar hoarseness that men get when sex is in the air.
Then drink, Ulfric, drink. Don't waste it.
I held the bloody glass out to him. He took it reverently in both hands. He drank, and I watched his throat convulse as he swallowed my blood. It should have bothered me more, I guess, but it didn't. The numbness was back, a distant, almost comfortable feeling. I fished under the bar until I found a stack of clean napkins and pressed them to my arm. The napkins soaked crimson in moments. The Ulfric had waded into the pack with my blood in his hands. They surrounded him, touching him, caressing, begging for him to share. He dipped his fingers in the nearly empty cup and held them down for the wolves to lick. Edward came to stand near me. He said nothing, just helped me put pressure on the wound, got more napkins from under the bar and a clean cloth to tie it tight. Our eyes met, and he just shook his head, the faintest of smiles playing on his face.
Most people pay money for information.
Money doesn't interest most of the people I deal with. The Ulfric called back to me through the reaching werewolves. His mouth was blood-stained, his neat beard and mustache thick with my blood. He stared at me with his golden eyes and said,
"If you want to talk to Nikki, help yourself."
"Thank you, Ulfric," I said. I hopped down off the bar, and Edward had to catch me or I'd have fallen. Fresh blood loss on top of everything else was not what I had needed. I waved him away, and he didn't argue. Edward undid Nikki's gag and took a step back. The werewolves had pulled back, giving us the illusion of privacy, though I knew that every werewolf in the room would hear us, even if we whispered. "Hi, Nikki," I said. He had to try twice before he said,
"Anita?"
I was here before 10. I put my hands on the bar and propped my chin on them so he wouldn't have to strain. The movement hurt my back, but somehow I wanted to be on eye level with him. The bulky makeshift bandage seemed to be in the way, but I wanted to keep the arm elevated. Nikki looked even worse up close. One eye was completely closed, blackened and blood-filled. His nose looked broken, blood bubbling from it when he breathed.
"He came back into town early."
I figured as much. "You've been a very bad boy, Nikki. Pissing off your Ulfric, power play behind his back when you're just human, not even a werewolf, and that thing. That's not voodoo. How the hell did you do that?"
"Older magic than voodoo," he said.
"What kind of magic?" I asked.
"I thought you wanted to talk about the monster that's killing innocent citizens."
His voice was strained, pain-filled. Normally I'm against torture, but I just couldn't find much pity in my heart for Nikki. I'd seen his creation, and I felt the torment of its parts. Nope, I just couldn't spare much sympathy for Nikki. He'd never take enough damage to make up for what he'd done, not at least while he was alive. Hell might be a very nasty place for Nikki Bacco. I trusted the divine to have a better sense of justice and irony than I did. "Okay, what do you really know about the thing that's out there?" I asked. He lay there on the bar, wrists and ankles bound together, blood trickling from his mouth, and talked as if he were sitting behind a desk. Except for the little pain sounds he made every once in a while, which spoiled some of the effect.
"I felt it years ago. Maybe 10. I felt it wake."
"What do you mean, wake?"
"Have you had it in your mind yet?"
he asked, and this time I heard the fear in his voice.
"Yeah,"
I said.
"It was sluggish at first, as if it had been asleep or imprisoned, dormant for a very long time. It grew stronger every year."
"Why didn't you tell the police?"
10 years ago, the police didn't have any psychics or witches working for them, and I already had a criminal record."
He coughed and spat blood and a tooth out on the bar. It made me raise my head up, which forced Nikki to roll his head a little.
"What was I going to tell them? That there was this thing out there somewhere, this voice in my head, and it was getting stronger? I didn't know what it could do at first. I didn't know what it was."
"What is it?"
"It's a god."
I raised eyebrows at him.
"It was worshipped as a god once. It wants to be worshipped again. It says that gods need tribute to survive."
"You got all this from just a voice in your head?"
"I've had 10 years with the thing whispering in my head. What have you learned in less than that many days?"
I thought about it. I knew it was killing to feed, not just for sport. Though it enjoyed the slaughter, that I'd felt too. I knew it both feared me and wanted me. It feared another death worker on the opposite side, but it wanted to drink my powers and would have if Leonora hadn't stopped it. "Why has it just started to kill people now? Why, after a decade?"
"I don't know,"
he said. "Why does it slaughter some and skin others?"
"I don't know."
"What is it doing with the body parts that it takes away from the scenes?" Which was a detail that the police would not like me sharing with someone outside the investigation, but I wanted answers more than I wanted to be cautious.
"I don't know."
He coughed again, but didn't spit out anything. Good. If he'd continued to spit blood, I'd have worried about internal injuries. I didn't want to have to persuade the pack to take him to the hospital. I didn't think I'd have much luck. "Where is it?"
"I've never been there. But understand that what's been killing people is not the god. He's still trapped wherever he started. His servants have done all the murders, not him."
"What are you saying?"
"I'm saying that if you think you've got trouble now, you ain't seen nothing yet. I can feel him in the dark, lying like some kind of bloated thing filling up with power. When he's full enough, he'll rise, and it'll be hell to pay."
"Why didn't you tell me all this before?"
"You had the police with you the first time. If you turn me over to them, I'm dead. You've seen what I do. There wouldn't even need to be a jury."
He had a point. "When this is over, you have to dismantle it. You have to free their souls, agreed?
When I can walk again, agreed.
I glanced at his legs and saw that there was a lump under his pants leg. It was the bone of the leg, a compound fracture. Jesus. Some days there are so many stones to throw in so many different directions that I don't even know where to start.
Does this god have a name?
He calls himself the Red Woman's husband.
That can't be an original English phrase.
I think he knows what his victims know. By the time he came to me, he spoke in English.
So you think he's been here a long time?
I think he's always been here.
What do you mean always? Like eternity or a really, really long time?
I don't know how long he's been here.
Nikki closed his good eye as if he were tired. Okay, Nikki. Okay. I turned to the Ulfric. Is he telling the truth? The man nodded.
He didn't lie.
Great. Thank you for your hospitality, and please don't kill him. We may need him in the next few days to help kill this thing, not to mention freeing the souls of your packmates.
I'll lay off on the beating.
It was the closest thing I was going to get to a, yes, we are going to let him go and make sure he isn't hurt anymore. Great. I'll be in touch. Edward stayed near me as we walked to the door. He didn't offer me his arm, but he stayed close enough that if I stumbled, he'd be there. Bernardo already had the door open. Olaf just watched us walk towards them. I stumbled a little up the two steps to the door, and Olaf caught my arm. I looked up into his eyes, and it wasn't pride or honor or respect that I saw. It was hunger. A desire so great it was a physical need. A hunger. I pulled away from him and left a smear of blood on his hand. Edward was at my back, helping me towards the door. Olaf raised his hand to his mouth and pressed it to his mouth like a kiss. But he was doing the same thing that the wolves did. He was tasting my blood and liked it. There are all kinds of monsters. Most of them crave blood. Some for food, some for pleasure. But you're dead either way. Chapter 48. Everyone was quiet in the car. Olaf consumed by his own thoughts, which I wanted no details about. Bernardo had finally said,
"Where to?"
"My house," Edward said.
"I don't think Anita's up to anything else today."
For once, I didn't argue. I was so tired I was nauseated. If I could have found a comfortable position, I think I could have slept. We drove out of Albuquerque and headed towards the distant mountains, bright and cheerful in the morning light. I wished for a pair of sunglasses, because I suddenly was neither cheerful nor bright.
"Did you learn anything worth getting out of the hospital early?"
Edward asked. "I learned that the thing has a name, the Red Woman's husband. It is hiding someplace that it can't move from, which means if we can track it, we can kill it." I added, because just in case, they needed to know. "Nikki says it was worshipped as a god once, and that it still thinks it is one."
"It can't be a god," Bernardo said. "Not a real one."
"I'm the wrong person to ask," I said. "I'm a monotheist."
"Edward?"
Bernardo made a question of his name.
"I've never met anything that was truly immortal. It's just a matter of figuring out how to kill it."
I actually had met a few things that seemed immortal. Maybe Edward was right, but I'd seen things that I still couldn't figure out how to kill. Lucky me, the Naga had been a crime victim and not a bad guy, and the Lamia had been converted to our side. But as far as I knew, they were both immortal. Of course, I'd never shoved an incendiary grenade down their pants or tried to set them on fire. Maybe I just hadn't been trying hard enough. For all our sakes, I hoped Edward was right. We pulled onto the long road that led, as far as I could tell, just to Edward's house. It had a steeper drop-off than I'd noticed at night, enough of a drop-off that being an all-terrain vehicle didn't mean anything unless you could fly. A white truck pulled in behind us and started following us.
"Do you know them?"
Olaf asked.
"No,"
Edward said. I managed to turn in the seat far enough to watch the truck. It didn't try and overtake us or anything. There was nothing wrong with the truck except for the fact that it was on the road to Edward's house, and he didn't recognize it. Add to that that all four of us were paranoid by profession, and it made for tension. Edward pulled into the turnaround in front of his house.
"Everybody into the house until we find out who it is."
Everyone was quicker out of the car than I was, but then I'd just managed to get the bleeding on my arm stopped. Lucky for me, Edward had a heavy-duty first aid kit in the back seat. I had a nice big bandage taped to my arm and the wrist sheath shoved in my pocket. Edward was at the door, unlocking it. Olaf was behind him.
Bernardo had actually waited for me, as if he would have liked to offer to help me out of the car, but was afraid to. I was actually feeling rough enough that I didn't mind the babysitting, which told you how truly bad I felt. There was a small, sharp sound, a bolt being drawn back on a rifle, and everything happened at once. Edward had his gun out and pointed at the sound. Olaf's gun was out, but not pointed. Bernardo had his gun pointed, using the door as a brace. I have to admit, my gun was in my hand, but not pointed. I just wasn't used to the new holster, and having to lift the shirt with a wounded left hand. Damn, I was slow. Harold of the scarred face was leaning at the far end of Edward's house, with a high-powered rifle pointed at Edward. He had most of his body hidden behind the house, and held the rifle like he knew what he was doing. If he'd wanted to drop Edward, he could have done it before Edward got the drop on him. That Harold hadn't shot anyone yet meant they had come for more than just killing. Probably. Harold said,
"Nobody panics. Nobody gets hurt."
"Harold," Edward said, "when did you guys make bail?"
He was still staring down the barrel of his Beretta at Harold. I could almost guarantee he was sighting on the top of the other man's head, his best killing target from what little he had to shoot at. Edward did not shoot to wound.
"Only Russell got arrested," Harold said,
rifle settled comfortably against his shoulder. Speak of the devil. Russell came around the corner behind Harold. His nose was packed with white cotton and covered in a hard bandage. I'd broken his nose. Great. I thought terrorizing women and children carried more time than this, I said. I kept the gun behind the open door. I didn't want to give anyone an excuse to start shooting. The tall, silent Newt came around the other side of the house with a large, shiny revolver in his hands. He held it two-handed and moved in a cross-foot glide that said he knew what he was doing. There was a woman beside him, moving like a smooth, oiled shadow. She was 6 foot if she was an inch, and the tank top she was wearing showed off shoulders and arms that made most of the men look puny. Only her breasts, pressed against the shirt, showed her braless and very much a girl. Olaf pointed his gun at them. Bernardo moved up with his gun, and the woman turned to him. Olaf turned as Newt moved across in front of him like a long-distance dance. The woman and Bernardo were more practical. They just stood a little bit apart and stared at each other over their guns. Only Russell kept walking and didn't pull a gun. I tried pulling mine and pointing it at him. He did stop, but his smile got wider, and the look in his eyes got worse, as if he had plans for me, and they were all about to come true.
"You shoot me and they shoot your friends. You're the only one our boss wants," Russell said.
"But we're not here to kill anyone," Harold said very quickly, as if he wanted to be clear on that.
If I were staring down a gun barrel that Edward was holding, I'd want to be clear too. Russell started walking towards me, even though I had the Browning pointed at his chest.
"Our boss just wants to talk to you, that's all," Harold said. "I promise he just wants to talk to the girl."
I was backing up with the gun held out. Russell was still walking forward very confident. Unless I was willing to shoot him, he wasn't stopping. I did not want to be the one who fired the first shot. People were going to die, and I couldn't control which people that would be. I could hear the truck now, crunching over the gravel. I did the only thing I could think of. I turned and ran. I heard a surprised, "Hey!" from behind me. But I was over the edge of the slope and down the other side. I suddenly wasn't worried about tearing my stitches up or how tired I was. My heart was in my throat, and I found that not only could I walk without falling down, I could run. My mind seemed to be working faster and faster. I saw a dry wash at the base of the slope and a clump of trees to one side. I slid into the wash in a rush of small stones. I landed on all fours, heavy, and was scrambling to my feet before I felt the first trickle of blood down my back. I was behind the trees as I heard Russell slither down the slope behind me. I couldn't shoot him, but there were other options. I was aiming for the clump of trees. But say what you like about Russell, he could run, because I could hear him doing it. He wasn't going to give me enough time to hide. I ran past the trees and knew that I couldn't outrun him. The adrenaline was already beginning to fade, and the heat folded around me like a hand. I just wasn't up to a long chase today. I had to end it, soon. I slowed just a little, one to save energy, and one to let Russell catch up sooner. I took a big breath and prepared. I knew what I wanted to do, but my body had to do it. I couldn't hesitate because my back or my arm or anything else hurt. I risked a glance back, and Russell was almost there, almost on me. I kicked him, full out, straight in the balls. I did it without hesitating, almost without setting up for it, letting his own momentum carry him into me.
The shock sent me hopping backward, and I did what I still wasn't smooth at in class. I did a reverse roundhouse kick to where I thought his face would be. And it was. He'd crumbled, clutching himself, and he went to his knees with the kick. He stayed on all fours, shaking his head, but he didn't go down. Damn it. A voice yelled from up the slope.
I don't see them.
There was a long piece of bleached wood on the floor of the wash. I picked it up and hit him twice, hard. He finally slumped on the ground and didn't move. I didn't have time to check for a pulse. The wash stretched straight for about 100 yards before brush filled the end of it. There was a place in the bank that had washed away more than the rest. It was like a shallow cave. I had a split second to decide which way to go. I took the knife sheath out of my back pocket and threw it, knife and all, as far as I could towards the brush. I went for the cave, scrambling on feet and hands like a monkey, keeping low. I was in the cooler shade of the depression when I heard the men coming down the slope.
I don't see them, the first man said.
They went this way.
A woman's voice. Could there be two female bad guys? I didn't think so. Did that mean that there was one less gun up with Edward and the others? I let the thought go. I had my own problems. Rocks cascaded down over the overhang like a dry waterfall. At least one of them was coming down directly on top of me. Would the ceiling of the little cave hold the weight? I was already regretting hiding. But the wash stretched open and straight for too far. I'd have never made it to the place where it emptied and there was brush. I just wasn't that fast today. If they thought I'd gone that way and didn't see me, then it would be a good plan. If they turned and spotted me, it was a bad plan. I heard them coming, but the man's voice was right above me. It made me jump. He had to be standing just to the right of the roof.
Jesus, there's Russell!
He jumped into the wash and started running towards the fallen man. The woman was more cautious, sliding down into the wash, searching up and down the wash. She was so close I could have reached out and touched the leg of her jeans. My heart was thundering in my throat, but I'd stopped breathing. I was holding my breath, willing her to go to the men, to walk away and not look back.
He's alive,
the man said. Then he was up and moving towards the sheath I'd thrown.
She went this way.
He went for the brush. The woman walked towards him. He was already at the brush, pushing into it.
Maury, damn it, don't go in there.
She had to jog to have any chance of catching him. She didn't look back to see me crouched in the hole. When her broad back vanished into the brush and I heard the man curse, I crawled out of the hole and started up the slope on all fours. If the woman and Maury came out now, I would be caught like a black speck on a white sheet of paper. But they didn't come, and I made the top of the slope down from where I'd first entered, crawling on my belly to lie under the sage bushes that edged Edward's front yard. Something slithered off to my right, and it wasn't human. A snake. A snake had slithered away deeper into the bushes. Shit. Thank you, dear God, that it left. One more problem, and I was out of solutions. Of course, now every noise seemed to be reptilian, and crawling on my belly through the thick bushes, the smell of sage thick in the hot air, was a little slice of nightmare. I kept waiting to hear that dry rattle that would tell me I'd used up all my luck. Every twig that brushed my leg seemed to have scales. The only thing that kept me from screaming was the knowledge that someone would probably shoot me before they knew it was me. By the time I crawled to the very edge of the bushes one painful inch at a time, I was sweating, and it was only partially from heat. The sweat stung on my back, and I knew that some of the thicker trickles were blood and not sweat. I could see the yard through the last screen of sage. Things had not improved. The woman and the new man, Maury, had left the yard, but three others had taken their places. They had the men on their knees. Olaf had his hands laced on his bald head. Bernardo had his one good hand on his head, and his cast raised as high as he could. Edward was the closest to me. Newt was so close I could have put the knife into his foot. Harold was talking into a cell phone. He was waving one hand and had the rifle slung over one arm. He put the phone away from his mouth and said,
"He says search the house."
"What for?"
one of the new men said. He had dark hair and a revolver.
"For an artifact, something the girl used against the monster."
"What kind of artifact?" the dark man asked.
"Just do it,"
Harold said. Dark Hair grumbled, but he motioned and the two men left to go into the open door of the house. Edward must have unlocked it for them. What the hell had been happening while I was crawling through the bushes? The three men went into the house. Harold was still talking on the phone. That left just Newt with his 45, and he wasn't even pointing it at anyone's head. It would never get better than this. Any second now, the others would come back up the wash or out of the house.
I'd have liked to have at least gotten to my knees and plunged the knife into a vital area, but the bushes were too thick. I'd never push to my knees without making all kinds of noise. If I fired a gun, I'd alert all the others. Shit. I had two knives. I had one idea. I slipped the blade out of my right arm sheath, making sure my left hand had a good grip. Newt's foot was still so temptingly close. I took the invitation. I stabbed the right-hand knife into the foot opposite from his gun. I felt the blade sink into the ground underneath his shoe as he screamed. I was on my knees behind him as he tried to twist and bring the gun on me, but he had the gun pointed for someone standing on his left side, and I wasn't there. I plunged the other knife up into his pants, into the front of his pants, my hand between his legs, and I missed. I didn't hit flesh. Fuck. I twitched the blade to the side and felt him, but he wasn't cut. But he was very, very still. I hissed, "Don't move." He didn't move. He stayed like some kind of awkward statue. Harold started walking towards us. "What's wrong, Newt?" Newt swallowed and said,
"Nothing. Thought I saw a snake."
I whispered, "Good boy, Newt. If you want to keep the family jewels intact, very quietly hand me your gun." He let the .45 fall into my hand. I was close enough to whisper to Edward,
"What do you want me to do?"
"Call Harold over."
"You heard him, Newt," I said. The man never argued.
"Hey, Harold, can you come over here a second?"
Harold sighed, snapping the cell phone shut.
"What is it now, Newt?"
He was almost even with Edward when he noticed that Newt's gun was gone. I was still hidden behind the larger man's body. Even the blade was hidden in the cloth of his pants.
"What the hell?"
Bernardo pulled one of the gold chopsticks out of his hair, and it was a blade that ended in Harold's arm. Edward hit him in the gut, doubled him over, and disarmed him. He stood over him with the rifle. Olaf and Bernardo were on their feet. I don't know what the plan would have been next, because we heard the sirens. Police sirens.
"Did you call the cops, Harold?"
Edward asked.
"Don't be an ass," Harold said.
"Anita," Edward said.
"I didn't call them. I've still got a .45 pointed at you, Newt. Don't get cute."
But I withdrew the blade very carefully and stood up. I kept his gun pointed at his back, but I was beginning to doubt I'd have to shoot anybody. The sirens were almost here. The three guys came out of the house with their guns in plain sight. They looked to Harold, saw him on the ground, and Edward had the rifle to his shoulder and was sighting down the barrel at them. Their eyes flicked to the cops coming at a fast pace and back to Edward. They threw their guns down and laced their fingers on their heads without being told. I doubted it was the first time they'd had to do it. It was an unmarked car with a marked car following it. They skidded to a stop on opposite sides of the black truck, and four cops spilled out. Lieutenant Marks, Detective Ramirez, and two uniforms I didn't know. They had guns pointed, but looked a little unsure who the bad guys were. Couldn't blame them. We had all the guns.
"Detective Ramirez," I said. "Thank God."
"What's going on?"
Mark said before Ramirez could answer me. Edward told them that Harold and his men had jumped us and were trying to question us about the mutilation murders. Marks found that fascinating. Edward had known he would. Yes, Ted Forrester would press assault charges. Any good citizen would. There were enough handcuffs to go around, barely. "There are two more out there somewhere," Edward said in his best helpful voice. "There's one unconscious in the wash that way," I said. Everyone looked at me. I didn't have to pretend to be uncomfortable.
"He was chasing me. I thought they were going to kill the others."
I shrugged and winced.
"He's alive."
It sounded like an excuse even to me. They called for more men to search the area. They called for an ambulance for Harold, Newt, and Russell when they found him. I'd sat down on the ground waiting for everyone to do their jobs. I was using both hands to prop myself up. Now that the emergency seemed to be over, I wasn't feeling so good. Marks was yelling at me.
"You left the hospital against doctor's orders. I don't give a damn, but I want a statement. I want to know exactly what happened at that hospital."
I looked up at him, and he seemed to be taller than he was, farther away somehow. "Are you saying that all the lights and sirens were because you were mad at me for not giving a statement before I left the hospital?" A flush spread up his face, and I knew that that was exactly it. One of the uniforms called,
"Lieutenant?"
"I want that statement today."
He turned and walked away. I hoped he stayed there. Ramirez knelt beside me. He was wearing his usual, shirt sleeves rolled back, a striped tie at half-mast around an open collar.
You all right?
No, I said.
I went to the hospital today and you were already gone. That night, the elevator had been turned off because of the fire alarms. I had to double back and get the stairs and come up behind you. That's why.